Welcome back to Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. We humans surround ourselves with objects, and if my desk is any indication, we never get rid of anything. But what do the objects we bring into our lives say about us, our priorities, our values, our society? Those are the questions Wisconsinite Jonifer Fields is trying to answer. Fields is a student in the Material Culture Program at UW-Madison, where she studies what objects, images, and other material items mean in the context of our everyday lives. She is also taking her studies online in the form of a blog and virtual cafe she curates called It's a Material World. Here, the freelance public radio reporter conducts casual conversations and creates audio documentaries about why we have what we have. We'll hear one about garage sales in just a little bit. But first, Fields tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce just what the interdisciplinary field of material culture is all about.
Let's just say you go completely and totally crazy, and you leave your house and you lock the door. After the cops go in and make sure that it wasn't like a homicide or an abduction or anything, I would go in as a material culturalist and I would look at the objects that you have in your house and I would begin to create a narrative about you. My focus that I like to study, I like games. I like things that force people to be interactive. So I would look at the games you have in your house. Let's say that you have, I don't know, Uno. I might say, okay, the same person who owns Uno, is the same person who plays the chess set over there? Is it the same person that plays backgammon? Is it the same person that plays golf? So that's what I would do. I would begin to create a narrative about who possibly lived in that house and their possible interest. There are those who look at it from an archaeological point of view. There are those who look at it from an anthropological point of view. There are those who look at it from a literary point of view. So there are different ways to look at it. But basically, it's looking at the objects in the things that you keep around you and why you have those objects in your possession. What do you get out of them? What is their reason for being there?
I mean, how much can an object really tell us about an individual, or if we expand that, a culture at large? You know, what context do we need to have initially in order to study these objects, or do the objects themselves provide the context?
I think it's a little bit of both. That's the beauty about material culture, is that if you think about it this way, and I always like using examples because I think that that's the easiest way for people not only to hear it but to see it. If you get on the train or the bus and you look around you just at the people who are on the train or the bus, you might see somebody sitting there with a MacBook and an iPad and I don't even know what else, iPod and whatever touch this and whatever touch that. Maybe sitting next to somebody who's holding one of those old school CD players, the round ones with the giant headphones. Objects tell us a lot about who we are, because when you go to get an object, when you decide what you want to have near you, you're making decisions on many, many levels. Is it something that you're going to use on a daily level? Is it just an everyday object like a cup or a mug? Is it an evocative object? Is it something that you've gotten from, say, you've had a loved one pass away and you decided that you want their glasses or their thermos? Objects can tell us a lot about people. They just speak volumes without saying anything. When you look around you, you'll notice that everything, almost everything you touch has been designed. So it has a history in of itself. There are materials that it was made from. There was a time period in which it was made. Was it made as part of a popular trend? Was it made as a throwback to, say, a vintage trend? Is it an artifact? It tells you a lot about what's going on, past, present, and future, just all contained in that object.
You used a phrase that stood out to me, evocative objects. What do you mean when you say that?
An evocative object is something that has emotion, an emotional value for you. One of the most evocative, I have two evocative objects in my house. One is my father's thermos. It's a steel thermos that he took to work every day. And I use that thermos every single day as sort of a way to ground myself. And so that's what an evocative object is. It's something that has some emotional connection for you. It could be your favorite car. It could be your favorite mug. It could be a favorite pair of pants. It could be a favorite backpack. It could be anything that you own that for some reason it elicits an emotional response.
How new of a field of study is material culture? And what is its historic basis?
Its historic base is actually, I believe, and I will get argued down from this, I'm sure, by people who know a lot more than I do, is anthropology and archaeology. That's what I think. When we go to create past cultures, we tend to look at shards of pottery. We may look at a structure. We may look at a landscape. We could look at clothing. We could look at the objects they used every day. So these objects have this way of speaking to us throughout the ages. You think a pot is a pot is a pot, but a pot created in Roman times, although it may have been used for the same thing that you use a pot to store things in today, there's this whole line of history behind it, and you can sort of trace that and see what's going on in that culture just in that one object. Is it decorative? Is it just primarily just to be used? Why are there scratches and marks on it? What is that stain on it? Is that from oil? Is that from some other liquid? Is it blood? We don't know. And it just begins to have you think about that culture in a real sort of hands-on day-to-day way.
Haven't we sort of been doing this when you think about, as you were pointing out, artifacts in, say, a museum?
Absolutely. We, as a general public, we tend to do things in museums when we think about them as precious decorative objects. Material culture goes beyond that. It goes down to the everyday. Why does the fork that you use look like it looks? Why did you buy that particular toothbrush? Is it an object that's designed to fall apart in a few years? Is it something that's designed to be better? It really does give us a greater sense of what's happening in the community. Think about the 50s. Think about the 40s. Think about the styles and the way people lived in the 60s. On some levels, very differently than the way we live now. A couch is a couch is a couch, right? But a couch from the 50s looks different than a couch from the 60s that looks different than the couch from, say, 2001. Look at love seats. Are they the same size as they were in the 40s? Or have they increased their size in the new millennium because we have rampant obesity? Who knows? That's something that we can look at and make those judgments about. What about fabric? What about production? What about craftsmanship? Is the couch in the 40s something that was made primarily by hand? Or is it as compared to something that's made now that's purely production, mass-produced, manufactured?
Do inanimate objects like a couch, for instance, have agency? I mean, can these material objects become powerful or even political when you put them in the context of how are they produced? How long will they survive? Are they made sustainably? Things like that.
Absolutely. I think one of the ways that we can think about it is there's this what we tend to do in the States, and what happens in the States with a lot of our cast-offs, is they're sent to places like Haiti. And in Haiti, they call them Pepe. Right? So if you see a couch that comes from, let's say, typical middle class person in suburbia, let's just say that couch, you know, it's nothing really special. But you take that same couch and you put it on a ship and it ends up in Haiti as one of millions of things that are shipped there for people, too many things that are shipped there for people. And you see it in the context if it's covered with old clothes and it's covered with, you know, old detritus, and it's covered with shoes, and it's covered with cloth. That makes a huge political statement about how much excess we have and what we do with our excess. Are we just dumping it on Haitian people and they don't really need it or don't really want it or don't have a use for it? Are we flooding their economy with our old stuff and then damaging their, perhaps, furniture makers? What's happening to this object?
So then, as we are studying material culture, have we moved to being more materialistic and specifically creating and collecting items expressly for unique purposes?
There was a student at a conference that I went to that gave this brilliant presentation on guitars. And he's a guitar player, and he brought his guitar that was beat up because he played in all kinds of bands. And he talked to us about how it's become this trend with people of a certain age. I'm going to say, I believe he said men from like the ages of 30 to 50s, 50s, 60-ish, where what they do is that they get an image of a guitar, say one played by Jimmy Page, and they have this guitar antiqued and weathered as if it had been played by Jimmy Page all these years. So it's this utilitarian thing, this thing that somebody uses to produce music. It has a use. But what happens to it is that it's antiqued in a way that makes it not only extraordinarily valuable, but an object that you can no longer use. It's truly designed just to sit in your house. Now, this guy may not ever have even played a guitar in his life. However, he has some connection to that object. So he's taken this thing that at one point handmade, remade it, and now made it into a work of art.
And then that's where you come in as a material culturalist and determine what that says about that individual?
Exactly. And sometimes I'm very kind in my narratives, and sometimes I'm not.
Well, these are the questions and the narratives that you're collecting on your blog, It's a Material World. Can you tell me a little bit more about that project?
I have a history in public radio, and that really sprung out of an old love being combined with the new love. And what I do on the blog is that basically I produce pieces that are for broadcast, but I also have two writers that work for me, Claire Frost from San Francisco and Travis San Pedro from Texas, both students, one graduated, one in the process of graduating. And I want to create a place where we can talk about these things. Material culture is this broad, interdisciplinary thing, and you can come at it from many different ways. And the reason why I wanted to do it is that as someone who's always loved art and someone who's always loved art history, I often have found, unless I was in an academic setting or at a gallery or at a museum at that time, it was difficult for me to find people to talk about art with. It's become this thing, this sort of elitist thing. And I think the reason why people are so hesitant to embrace art is because they don't feel like they know the language. They don't believe that they have the words it takes to discuss this thing without being chastised for not having the proper vocabulary. So my master plan to take over the world is I want people to become used to just talking about the objects that they keep close to them. Describe it. Where did it come from? What does it say to you? Does it say anything? Is it necessary? Is it unnecessary? Why did you buy the red one? Why did you buy the black one? Was this something that was manufactured? Was it handmade? Was it made in this time period? Is it an old object? So I know that what I want to do is create a conversation. I want it to be a virtual cafe. I want to talk about objects and have people give their two cents on it. Is it valid? Is it not? I don't know. Well, let's talk about it and find out. And what I like about material culture is that if it's your thing, there's no wrong answer. So if we have confidence to talk about the things that we keep close to us, why couldn't we take that conversation outside of our home and to wherever we go? And I also want people to think about, is what I have necessary? Why do I have it? Do I really need to have, I don't know, I think maybe now I have maybe 75, 80 pairs of shoes. The answer to that one is yes. But any immaterial culturalist that would come in my house and make a judgment about me, because this woman's crazy. She's all over the place. She collects fine art, but she also has something that obviously came from a thrift store. She made that thing in that corner over there, and why she has a banjo, we'll never know. Because over in that corner, she has, you know, her Pro Tools with her iMac setup or MacBook Pro setup. I really believe, and my professor Ann Smart Barton really hit me to this, is that once you start to study material culture and think about the objects that you have around you, you just don't look at anything the same again. You just truly don't. I don't think so. Because every object you have just speaks volumes about you without you having to say a word.
Well, Jennifer Fields, thank you so much for coming on Lake Effect and telling us about material culture.
You're welcome.
Jennifer Fields is Lake Effect's newest contributor and a student of material culture at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. A freelance producer for NPR and the BBC, she also curates the blog and virtual cafe It's a Material World. You can find a link to it at wuwm.com/lakeeffect, where you can also listen to a supplemental audio file about the burgeoning do-it-yourself movement and how the UW program and the Chipstone Foundation, located in Fox Point, have made Wisconsin a destination for material culture study. Fields spoke with Stephanie Lecce. Fields' feature for today's program focuses on material culture through the lens of two people for whom collecting and selling objects is a way of life.
Mark Keenis has what some may call an unusual relationship with objects.
Well, people ask me where I get it from, and I tell them it's coming at me, and if I don't duck quick enough, I own it.
Mark is a big guy. His gray beard matches a thick head of hair, tamed by a blue baseball cap. We're standing outside the Wilmar Neighborhood Center in Madison, surrounded by over 300 chairs, tables, bookshelves, and bar stools, not to mention countless knickknacks, paperbacks, crafts, and who knows what, occupying every available surface. A giant blue tarp hangs above the sidewalk, the street, and even the parking lot, protecting us from the hint of rain in the air. I'm new to the field of material culture, and one of the first essays I read cautioned against making judgments based on my personal relationship with objects. It's a hard lesson to learn. I was sure that Mark felt the same way about stuff as I did.
I could care less about any of it. It's neat. I love watching it pass through. I don't want to own any of it more than a little bit, a little while. That's long enough. Because if I own it, then I can't own something else. I want to see everything. If I was going to do my life all over again, I'd never do it the same way twice, because I want to see something I haven't seen. I want to be somewhere I haven't been. It's the same way for the stuff. I want it to be somewhere other than the dump. I want it to have another life. Things have 3, 4, 6, 8, 10 lives, if you can just think about it. I mean, these golf balls are grommets on my tarp because they work better than grommets. People ask me what something is. I say, what do you want it to be? Because it doesn't matter what it was if it's at a garage sale. If it works for you to do what you want it to do, that's what it is now.
What is it about an object that makes you want to give it a life outside of the moment that you have it, the moment that you cross it?
It doesn't talk back to me. It doesn't treat me badly. It just is. It's inert. It's neutral.
Well, and if we weren't doing this, these things would end up in a landfill. And the idea is if someone can use them, that's what should happen to them.
That's Sam Miller. She says that she and Mark have been business partners for over 20 years. They hold this annual garage sale to support programming at the Wilmar Center. According to Mark, it's a partnership based on extraordinarily common ground.
There was two things that I keep in my vehicle, and I never expected to see anybody else keep them in their vehicle, much less in the same place. One, I drive a stick shift, all right? I kept a roll of duct tape on the stick shift so I could always find the duct tape. I also keep a pipe wrench underneath my seat. And she and I were both at the same auction once, and I was helping her load her vehicle, and I noticed that she had duct tape on her stick shift and a pipe wrench under her seat. And I'm like, wow.
And that was it.
Sam is smiling in spite of the threatening storm. Dressed in layers to fend off the chill, her asymmetrical strawberry blonde locks fall gently to the collar of her overcoat. She says that what started as a hobby has turned into a second line of work, and her partnership with Mark has helped expand her business. However, she has to be careful not to keep more than she sells.
There are things that I find that I really like and I end up living with for a while, but then sometimes I'll let them go as well. So they'll come and stay with me for a while, and then they'll go on and live somewhere else.
The things that I need to have are my bib overalls, a canoe, a kayak, and my laptop computer so I can study the dictionary.
And your popcorn bowl.
Oh, and my popcorn bowl. I don't spend enough time in the canoe. I don't spend enough time in the kayak. I don't spend enough time studying dictionary. I don't spend enough time playing Scrabble. Therefore, anything else I can let go, because the things that I value the most, I already don't spend enough time on.
Both Sam and Mark agree that the items are priced to go, and they're willing to haggle. Just don't push your luck.
I had an object that I had multiples of, and this woman wanted it for a quarter, and it was on the dollar table, and I wouldn't give it to her. She kept coming back and, like, got angry that I wouldn't give it to her for a quarter. And finally, she said, my husband's a policeman. And I, you know, it's like, I could care less. This is a dollar. And if you won't pay a dollar, you can't have it. And I just dropped it. And she reached for it. And missed it, and it fell and crashed. I said, well, all right, never mind. You can have it if you want it. Pick it up. It's yours. And I turned around and walked away.
Mark says he's never done that before or since. And according to Sam, that's a good thing. Because after all,
the reason it's here is for it to go. It's not here because we want it. It's here because we want it to be somewhere else.
During my first semester as a student of material culture, one of my professors said that my new understanding of objects and our relationship to the stuff we keep near would forever change the way I see the world. She's right. Now that you've had a taste of object study, I wonder if the same rings true for you.
Now it's time that we get our values straight. Cuss with material things, I just can't even. It's all about being happy, baby.
Jonifer Fields is a freelance producer for NPR and the BBC and a student of material culture at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She's also Lake Effect's newest contributor. And that is our show for Wednesday. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again tomorrow morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect on WUWM FM and HD1, Milwaukee Public Radio. For now, stay right here because fresh air is next.